He welcomed in here to wrap up KEF Politics. Got Dan Pacini on the line. We're going to talk about something that I think is incredibly important. I think it's important because I think this is where Americans are getting screwed. Article in Imprimis magazine dealt was written by John Lott, by the way. Got to give full credit where credit is deserved. Is ensuring election integrity anti-democratic? I thought it was a very interesting article in the sense that the election rules that were put into place back in the 70s, etc., by Jimmy Carter and Jim Baker, basically were a far cry from what they are today. Voter identification was very definitely required, as it is in the majority, far and away the majority, like 47 of the European countries require some very stringent identification if a person wants to vote. In the United States, you don't even have to speak English to vote, and you don't even have to know anything about politics. Danny, what's your opinion on this?
Well, I thought it was interesting that commission that Carter and Baker were the head of, and there were a number of people, Tom Daschle and other people involved in it, that they've essentially, many of them have gone back on it. Carter just about his own findings, which just tells you how much politics has become a part of this whole thing. It's just too bad. Election integrity is critical. There's rampant fraud in our elections. It's not just the fraud that Trump was alleging. We don't know who's voting these ballots. That's the bottom line. It's not that they're not counting it correctly. There could be something going on in there. The Russians famously said that, you know, it's who counts the votes that matters. But who's submitting these ballots? You have pressure on people. I thought in Primus, again, you got to love Hillsdale College. They really come through in discussing these matters. But prior to any of this election integrity, before we had a secret ballot, people would sell their vote. You'd use a different colored ballot or whatever ticket you put in for the voting system. And you would sell your vote, and some people were voting other people's vote, voting dead people's ballots. And that's what we have now. We don't know who's voting these ballots, and that's why you need to have some kind of ID system. Either show up at the polls and demonstrate who you are or submit an ID. At least with the absentee system, which is different from the mail-in ballot system, the absentee system, you know, you at least have to ask for a ballot. You yourself have to ask for a ballot and you show ID. With the mail-in, they're just sending them all over. I call it confetti ballots because they're just kind of throw them all over the place. And we don't know who's putting pressure on who within a family is doing it, who at an old folks home is pressuring people or grabbing ballots at an apartment building where they're all in kind of a public mail area. You just don't know who's voting these ballots. So somehow, some way, we've got to get back to a system that makes some sense. And it was interesting how Primus talked about how this is true in most of Europe, which we keep trying to compare ourselves to. I don't know why, but most of Europe practices this common sense view.
47 countries, Danny.
Yeah.
Rather amazing.
It is amazing, and it's unfortunate that we don't feel this way, but I hate to keep blaming the left, but they clearly are looking for a result, and they don't care about the morality of how they do it. They know that there's rampant fraud in these systems, and yet they are willing to look the other way to get the results that they want. And somehow, some way, we have got to inform people that you just can't have a system like this where you don't have a secret ballot and you don't have controls over those ballots.
Got another thing I want to get your opinion on, Danny, and that is I'm reading a book about Fauci, and in that particular book, I'm not going to necessarily read the parts that I want your opinions on because I've already done that earlier in the show, but the author who, as you just alluded to, it was a very important person, part of the author of the book, part of the in crowd, so to speak, with the Kennedy family, and he said that in the year 2000, the Democratic Party, as it existed in the relatively near past, ceased to exist, and that the Democratic Party today is nothing more than the Progressive Party, who are nothing more. He doesn't say this, but it's what I say. They're nothing more but socialists, man.
Well, I got to tell you, Mr. Kennedy and I would probably not agree on virtually every subject. And it's interesting you see how this subject of vaccine and vaccine mandates, how people break down. It doesn't necessarily follow the party lines. There's no question that a lot of woke progressive types, they're into the whole mandate, government authority, all that stuff, and they're too smart for all of us, and they know better than us. But there are a lot of people who typically come down on the other side of the fence, who are on the left side, who don't like being told what to do. And that kind of used to be the way the left was. The left did, they felt very strongly about civil rights. And they felt that we have certain protections in our Constitution and that those shouldn't be violated. But they've kind of looked the other way. They've chosen this side. It's almost a religion with them. We've talked about this before. But he makes some very critical points that this is another incremental step where the government is taking away your own personal authority, and we better watch it. I think he's absolutely right. The federal government for sure has no authority in this matter whatsoever. The states, they have they do under the Constitution have a lot of authority still in the area of health, but the federal government has no place in it whatsoever. And you can see that Biden keeps losing in court. But I think his book is right on. I totally agree with him, even though I wouldn't agree with him on virtually every other subject.
Well, I think it's interesting because everything that you just said, I think, is rather amazing, and I think it really shows that the Democrats are doing a great job of shooting themselves in the foot. Interestingly enough, we had a very hotly contested recall election in Seattle just this past week. One of the Seattle City Council members who inappropriately used funds, as I understand it, and who is an avowed socialist, savant, is her name. She was married to a Microsoft executive, if I'm not mistaken. They got divorced. She is now a card-carrying socialist, and she's proud to admit it. They tried to recall her in Seattle, and up until yesterday, she was way, way behind in that particular election. And yesterday, an hour after the results came in, I got them from a friend, and it turned out her recall had failed. I would like to know how she managed to get enough votes, because on Wednesday it was mathematically impossible for her to miss the recall, but she did it somehow. Any comments on that?
Well, I feel for people in Seattle, I still think the best advertisement for conservative management is lefty management. You get to see it in action. Conservatives aren't typically not very good at being persuasive, but when you see the alternative, you realize, okay, well, this is where I need to go. But, again, it could be a couple of things. Again, it's who counts the votes, for one, and who's voting these votes. We have no idea. You just don't know. They're not transparent systems. So I couldn't even begin to comment on what actually happened there. I'm amazed that some of these people are in office. Can anyone explain Ilhan Omar in Minneapolis? I mean, I don't know. How do these people get into office? But gradually, as people see them, or any of the DAs across the country, Chesa Boudin and all these people, and the guy in L.A., how do they get to office? But then you have to live under them, and then people start to change their mind. You start to see in Seattle that things are changing there. They've had enough of it, and we're going to get to that point where people have had enough.
Well, I think that people who I talked to in Seattle when I was down there on Halloween taking the grandkids trick-or-treating, I spoke with a lot of people in a fairly liberal neighborhood, I have to say, very nice neighborhood, but really fairly liberal, I would have to say. And every one of those people, instead of getting offended by my questions, said exactly the same thing. The city government has to go. I have innumerable friends who want to leave Seattle. They can't do it because economically it's impossible for them because of their jobs. But Seattle, unfortunately, is turning into a major, major cesspool, almost as bad as San Francisco, which is pretty bad. There are parts of Seattle you definitely are advised to not go into after dark by yourself, assuming you're not a retired Green Beret or what have you. And I left Seattle during Halloween fairly optimistic because I knew we had an election coming up. I thought we'd see more conservatives in office, and in fact we did. But in the case of Sawant, no, she was not recalled, and that's a shame, in my opinion. Danny, thank you so much, man.
Good to be with you.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.